Reading from the Narada Bhakti Sutras 44. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kama, Krodha, Moha, Smriti, Pramshaburinasha, Sarvanasha, Karanatvat. Material association is the cause of lust, anger, confusion, forgetfulness, loss of intelligence, and total calamity. Purport. One may wonder why Narada is dwelling on the effects of bad association after having discussed advanced subjects in Bhakti Yoga. But who else will heed the warnings except those who are serious about crossing the ocean of birth and death? Even one who is practicing devotional service in the renounced order can fall down. As stated in Chaitanya Chandradayanataka, Nishkinchanasya Bhagavat Bhajanon Mukhasya. For a person who is seriously desiring to cross the ocean of material ocean, engage in the transcending service without material motives. Seeing a materialist engaged in sense gratification, more abominable than drinking poison willingness. And so the advice against bad association is intended for all, including those transcendentalists who wish to progress without impediment. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shavakaya Chakshurunmulakam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manogistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kajamayam Tadati Sapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Taruvnascha Asindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Excuse me. Greetings from Vrindavan. Nice to hear your voice, Tara. Just yesterday, we finished hosting a group of Raghunath's and Kastubha's tour group of 25 people, mostly from New York. wonderful. And hearing their realizations of how much they were affected by visiting the holy land of Vrindavan. And now some are staying on. So we're on a section where describes how to attain bhakti. And this is really, what other goal can there be in one's life than filling their heart with love? Purity, selflessness, that's bhakti to the highest degree. And Narada was discussing the many important roles, the many important the roles that many practices play in attaining this. And then talked about the importance of mercy. When you talk about the importance of mercy, you're also talking about the incredible value of the thing you're trying to attain, and your own lack of qualification to attain it. Bhakti is the most special thing. It's the essence of God's pleasure potency, love, devotion. And one second, I have to do something with the phone. So there's, when you talk about mercy, you're talking about the incredible value of the thing you're trying to attain, and the price of it being so high that one is unable to pay, and the necessity for the kindness, the mercy of that object of your aspiration to bridge the gap between your lack of qualification to actually achieve it. So mercy was stressed in terms of the process of bhakti. But that doesn't negate the necessity of some endeavor to achieve it. And I thought of an analogy that describes that kind of pretty perfectly, I think, is a farmer. A farmer, the prime thing in the production of a good harvest is rain, and rain is not under the control of the farmer. But at the same time, because rain usually does fall, even though it's beyond your control, and if rain did not fall, then why would anybody even attempt to be a farmer? So at the same time, although we are dependent on mercy, if there wasn't a merciful person who actually is willing to bestow that mercy, why would we even try? If the divine was cruel and just wanted us to suffer, why would we even endeavor to try to get the mercy of the divine? And what is that mercy? That mercy is that potency of love that gives God pleasure. He is willing to put that in people's hearts because that's what our hearts are for. Our hearts are meant to be receptacles of love and devotion. So why will he not bestow that mercy, even though it's something far beyond our qualification to pay for? And at the same time, why would we not, if we are seeking that as our goal, the selfless love potency, why would we not make the endeavor to cultivate our hearts to be a proper receptacle for it? And in fact, that acknowledgement of the glory of the divine and our lack of power to control that, the humility of the acknowledgement of our own limitations is in fact the major cultivation for making our hearts a receptacle of that divine mercy. And therefore, in Vrindavan, there are many, many people that are working very hard in their own personal practices to cultivate their heart, develop humility, and to attain the mercy of the divine. In fact, mantra chanting, which is also a form of prayer, is the process of cultivating humility, because prayer is also called entreaty. Entreaty means begging. When you pray, you are putting yourself in a humble position. No one can pray unless he's in the humble position. I was recalling yesterday in my class that when I was young, I have an older brother by 2 years, and he was a sports fan. And he liked to go to boxing matches at Madison Square Garden. Sometimes he would take me. And one time we went to the Felt Forum, and we went to see Muhammad Ali practice. And so Muhammad Ali used to say, "I am the greatest. I am the greatest. I am the..." That's not prayer. Prayer would be, "He is the greatest. He is the greatest." But when you pray, it's putting yourself in a position of humility to feel that mercy and kindness that is manifest inherently within the potency of the divine. But here, what the verses we're going to discuss today is therefore the necessity to avoid a satsanga. I'm going to explain that. I explained this last time a little bit. It's just like if you're a farmer, yes, you're dependent on the rain, but you have to pull out the weeds. It doesn't necessitate that the ultimate result is not dependent on you. And if one has that consciousness that the ultimate result is solely dependent on oneself, then that increases ahankara, the egotistical conception that covers the heart to the flow of mercy and the feelings of love and devotion. So this is a satsang. You have to avoid the bad association. Now, I've been really honing on this, and it just is just kind of a realization and a philosophical point that I really feel it's applicable in so many circumstances, and that what is this sangha? And the sangha really means the intimate. It doesn't mean dealings. It's not sangha when you just deal with someone or if you're kind with someone. It's really where in the core of your heart what you value and appreciate. And generally, what you value and appreciate, you bring close to yourself, whether it is object or person. And therefore, when you have that appreciation, it creates a channel whereby the potency or the intention of the object or the qualities of the person that you value and appreciate comes to you. And this is the main way in which people change their consciousness, one way or another. What you associate with and what you value. I'm seeing, too, that that group came with Raghunath. It was a little bit more difficult than the previous group because he had about 25, 30 people. And it's hard to keep a contiguous unity. So little people, little independent, some people. And really, for any really deep experience, group experience, there has to be a unity. It's just a psychological fact. And I believe by the mercy of Vrindavan that a unity was achieved at the end. But I thought for me it's really easy. Raghunath and Kasturba do all this work of trying to bond the group together, and then I just comes to Vrindavan, and it was just one or two days. It was just such nice relationships I developed with them, and especially Vrindavan is done in the proper way. Therefore, even though it's being urbanized and covered, if Vrindavan is done in the proper way, doors will open to new experiences, spiritual experiences. And we just opened the door in our afternoon walk through the gardens of Vrindavan, and at this time of the year, the rose gardens. And it's just an experience. See, it's not just rose gardens and jasmine gardens. But in Vrindavan, things are for Krishna. All those flowers that are being grown are going to be picked by the gardeners, made into garlands, brought to the temples, sold and offered to the deities. And the people who do it also are devotees. So the beauty in Vrindavan is connected so intrinsically to love, to selfless love, to the divine. And therefore, it's loving. The fragrances, the roses. We had all the people, mostly ladies, of course, but quite a few men too. Just go into the rose gardens and pick those roses and just put it in your ear, the side of your ear. The most beautiful, lush, and you know how America is such a poor country that you buy one rose for a dollar. 50 rupees, here you get a whole garland. And it's kind of plastic. There's no fragrance. These are so soft. So the experience is it really has an effect on the heart. Because there's something very essential, intrinsic within Vrindavan, a spirit of love that manifests in objects of beauty to offer in love. The experience was just wonderful. Anyway, back. So a satsang tyag. So this sangha, it is really the key. And as he was talking in the previous verses, that, the essence of bhakti is the association of saintly people and saintly objects and what they can do for your heart, then now the opposite is being discussed. What you'll bring into your heart. I was just thinking, one thing that's really, really important to bring into the heart is the quality of honesty. Because if one could line up one's actions with one's values, one can go a far way in spiritual life. A lot of problems is we don't live by what we believe. But if one is attached to honesty, one will act according to what one believes, no matter what the price. Because the attachment to honesty and the pain of dishonesty will be greater than the attachment for anything else, no matter how much it may please one. And it'll be more painful to be dishonest. Anything else. You see that. I know I lived in India now for 36 years. When I came, the culture of some of the elderly people who were just core impressions when they were young. That's the whole idea of the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. It's also very much about being honest and getting those impressions in the consciousness and attachment to it. By how? By the admiration of the people who have those qualities. And that's what the society would project to those who are young. Their heroes were those who would stick to their word, who perform their duties. So, here it says you have to give up that kind of admiration and attachment for objects which promote egoism rather than devotion. I'm going to read a little bit from a commentary. It says evil companies should be renounced. He said, having extolled the glories of satsang, Narada now interdicts evil company. Just as satsang, people of truth, people who value the God and the service to the God, inclines the mind to divine stories, divine discourses, divine names, divine love, proper conduct, discretion, dispassion, nonviolence, truth, continence, pride, tranquility. And a man, by that association, becomes righteous and devotional. There's nothing more important. You know, you may not have it in your village, you may not have it in your town, you may have to take it through books. For all objects have an effect, but the object that has the maximum effect are the people we value. And then it says, contrariwise, when there's a satsang, bad company, a person becomes attached to sense objects, idle talk, slander, indiscipline, covetousness, prestige, hypocrisy, ambition. Anger, restlessness. So that comes from bad company. And because in our lives we've had bad company, these things are also lodged within our consciousness. And it's refreshing. It's so refreshing to meet an honest person with core integrity. I know my friend, Professor Bryant, who's a scholar, and he some of you may have heard this story. He told it to me. He took initiation from a great scholar in Vrindavan. I mean, really, one of the top scholars in Vrindavan. So when he was going to get the lecture, when he was going to hear the lecture, he was expecting something scholarly. His teacher just told him two words: be honest. And, you know, throughout the Shastras, there's always stories of association with the wrong person. We know, you know, a nice kid falls into bad company. Somehow there's something in that bad company that attracts him. Maybe the guy is getting all the women, or maybe, you know, he may be admired because there's a wrong culture in the school. So the kid who actually is dishonest, you know, the teenager who's dishonest and seems to have an advantage, and then the person admires him for that reason, because he himself has some ambition or he has some low self-esteem, then it becomes destroyed. They're, you know, they say, what is it, one bad tree can... Anyway, and the whole Mahabharata war, you know, it was the company of Shakuni, and then the Holocaust of that starts. And we talked about too. It's objects and people. They represent truth. And what is truth? Truth is that there's God and God's energies, and the energy and the ultimate reality of everything is service, is sacrifice. And those objects that are created for the offering of sacrifice, or we perceive as utilized for the object of sacrifice, they create that mood in our heart. And those that are not and are promoted for centering us as centering our consciousness in control and enjoyment, which a lot of the advertisement is, the adoration and purchase, then it has that effect on us. So here he's really stressing that. And then in the verse that we discussed today, he says, why? Because it stirs those qualities connected with the ego. One second, I have to find something. So, why give up bad association? Now we're beginning three verses. Because it activates the samskaras, which are klesha. There's two types of impressions within our consciousness. They're called klesha and aklesha. Klesha are impressions that cause trouble. And what are the impressions that cause trouble? They're the impressions that attach us to the egotistical conception of life. And what are the impressions that are aklesha? They're not trouble. They're the impressions that elevate the consciousness to a higher level of perception, contentment, and the mood of service. So, objects, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, they have a potency. Each object is constructed and made with a particular intent in mind in relationship to the consciousness. And therefore, it will have an effect on the consciousness. And our mind is composed of samskaras. They're impressions for what we like and what we don't like. And we may like things that are klesha, that cause us trouble, that degrade the consciousness. Or we may like things that elevate the consciousness. We may avoid things. We have an aversion for things that are helpful for the consciousness, or we may avoid things that are a klesha or good for the consciousness. So it activates our bad samskaras. I give seminars often on environment, on consciousness. The environment will affect the consciousness. But it's not just the environment. It's your perception of the environment according to your own samskaras also. The same object can be seen for the service, or the same object can be seen in terms of our ego. I tell that story sometimes. Initially my parents were objecting to me coming to spiritual life. Then I was kidnapped, and then I escaped, and then my parents were going to commit me to a mental hospital, and I saw the psychiatrist. He had to ascertain. And the psychiatrist asked me if I was hallucinating. Because while he was interviewing my parents, he saw me in the hotel lobby and I was basically chanting. And I had my beads, it was on my fingers. So he thought I was talking to myself or something. But I told him, no. Not hallucinating, but it's not exactly that I'm seeing what everyone else is seeing. And then I began to quote from one of Prabhupada's purports. And quoting from one of Prabhupada's purports that I had read previously the day before, it really impressed this person. That not only wasn't I hallucinating, but that I had some insight. It also gave me a great sense of edification to see what happens when you think about and assimilate deeper conceptions of truth and how they can affect neutral and intelligent people. So I told him, I said, I'm not hallucinating, but it can't be said that I'm seeing what everyone else is seeing, or even you. I said, because I'm very, very devoutly theistic. And in my vision of the world, I see things as the energy of God meant for God's service. And therefore, when I see a rose, I see that as energy of God and meant to be engaged in the source of energy, which is God. I said, someone who's not theistic, he sees or even has the illusion that that energy is separate from God and meant for his own enjoyment. So I said that although I'm not elucidating, it can't be said that I'm seeing the same thing as you. And he was extremely impressed with that answer. And he supported me. And you know, he didn't commit me in the mental hospital. So a lot has to do with our vision. But at the same time, we have to be wary that people... Well, of course, you relate to people in different ways. If someone is innocent, but they have qualities that are asat, you can relate to them in the mood of compassion without creating a conduit for those qualities to come into your heart. But if you relate to them in a mood of equality or friendship, then they can. Then they can. So this is just essential for elevation in consciousness, which is the goal of our life. To be cognizant of the effect of the environment, specifically the qualities of the people in that environment, and how we appreciate and develop connection with them. Because it activates the samskaras that are klesha, which is intense hankering and desire, motive passion. Motive passion means like more, better, anger, frustration, confusion, forgetfulness, stupidity, rude. Those are in us, and they become activated. They become nourished. When I was in Puri, there, one, you know, recognized saint and a very humble person came to my yatra, which is very humbling for me because he was 86 years old. Practicing Krishna consciousness for 70 years, chanting 64 rounds for 70 years, PhD in Sanskrit, and a Bhava Bhakta. When you hear him sing, it's amazing. So he spoke twice, but mostly he was sitting in my lectures. I think his accent was a little bit hard to hear, and somehow, whatever way I presented, people did come to hear me, so I had to receive that I would speak. And I was lecturing on something, and some question came up. And it was about how strict Lord Chaitanya was with a renunciate. And when one of his renunciates begged rice from a lady, and Lord Chaitanya was very strict with him, you know, and banned him from his association. And this was always a contention, why Lord Chaitanya was so strict. So the question was asked to me, but the saint was, actually I was on the plane, he was sitting, and he was eager to explain it, and then he immediately quoted this verse, the Kinchanasya Bhagavan Bhajano, that if you're really serious, then you're very, and you want to perfect your consciousness, you got to be very careful of, and for one who actually has that spiritual intention, this type of sangha, it says here, it's hahanta hanta, alas, alas, visha bhakshanato pyasadu. It's worse than poison. Because what does it kill? It kills. Worse than killing the body. Worse than killing the body is killing the spirit of service and love within your heart. when the devotees were incarcerated in Russia, and they're very devout Krishna bhaktas, but they couldn't ever get out of the country to come to India. When they finally came, because a lot of them had endured so much in prison, we were to worship and respect them greatly. One of them that was incarcerated came to me and said, he said, "I think it's more dangerous for us to be in Vrindavan than it was to be in the prisons." Because he said, in the prison, they can only kill your body. He said, "But with your praise and glorification for us, you know, you can destroy our devotion. Because if you have a desire for prestige and distinction, if you put yourself in a mood of being worshipped and glorified, and not being transparent to the real source of whatever qualities people see you in, then it's dangerous." So anyway, this person described that when he initially came, and he was being trained as a monk, when he heard this story and heard these verses, he would just stay in his mutt, in his little temple. You know, in his initial training period. And in the commentary, why this a satsang, what happens, how it works. So this is how it works. It's described in Bhagavad Gita. Jayato Vishyan Pumsa Sangos Techo Pajayate. Sangat Sanjayate Kam. That first, when you're in the association of objects, which are sat, or project a sat, or promoting a sat, promoting the egotistical conception of life, and alluring the sense of control and enjoyment within the consciousness, then you become attached to them. And then what happens is, when you're in that consciousness, no one ever fulfills all his desires. It's just not the way the world is constructed. Is that you may not always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you just may get what you need. So then what happens? Inevitably, frustration is going to arise, and some type of anger is going to come within your consciousness. And when that anger comes into your consciousness, then smriti vibhrama. Then you're going to lose sense of what your values are. When you lose sense of what your values are, then your intelligence is destroyed. And when your intelligence is destroyed, then then your spiritual conceptions get ruined. I mean, I've been in this field of spiritual practice for 36 years. And, you know, you can just watch. And therefore, in the next verse, it's going to say, it's actually going to warn. In the next verse, it says, Tarangita Apime Shangat Samudhayante, rising like waves from this association, from this Sangat, from the Sangha, the Asat Sangha. Then what happens is it creates Tarangita, waves. And the waves, Samudhayanti, they create an ocean of misery. So So it also now warns. This is what happens. These things snowball. How often does someone open up the computer just to get some information and then gets drawn in for a longer period than they want? That's how it works. The samskaras, the aklesha samskaras, those that degrade the consciousness, bring one away from a true perception and contentment, become apt and you become lost. Small waves create great effects. And that's why spiritual people have vows. And so we said, well, why not just take a little? Why say no? A little is not bad. But a little leads to a lot. And therefore, people, this is talking about transcendence. It's not renunciation. It's not staying aloof from the objects, but it's developing a consciousness of dedication. And on the basis of that, you can approach the world in a consciousness of service, which may entail rejecting things, not everything. So this is why also, as Narada is explaining this process of bhakti, how to become a receptacle for mercy. We have to cultivate the consciousness. It's all about our consciousness and how we perceive things and what we feel. And that's going to be dictated by our sangha, the conduits we create to objects by our appreciation and value of them. Therefore, the first thing in spiritual life is having the proper value system. And of course, hopefully that's created at a young age by the proper parenting. Parents should have a set idea what are their values, and therefore what the environment will be that we subject our children to. A very fine line, how you become balanced. The prophet said you can't just say no, 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 no. But you can dictate the environment, the limits, the boundaries, the world. And it works. So here, only therefore, when you have your vows, you're strict in what your principles are. Because once you open up, then it says here, Talangati, like waves, they'll create a great ocean. And therefore, the example is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Lord Chaitanya, when Lord Jagannath, the deity of Krishna, is taken on chariot to the Gundicha, the temple representing Vrindavan, and Lord Chaitanya is preparing to greet Lord Jagannath. They clean the temple thoroughly, and they clean it again and again and again and again and again and again. And they even clean the outside. Once they get all the dirt, then they put the dirt far away, because once it's in the proximity, it could blow back in. But the example is given for this, because we want to create the reciprocal and then it's going to describe not just you avoid negative association and its effects, but you have to cultivate, on the other hand, a simple humility through various means. By serving great devotees, by becoming, so he says, who can cross this ocean? One who abandons that sangha, that value and appreciation for those objects. And, one has to see what his digestive capacity is. in terms of association. Many things can be used. It's not always black and white. There are objects that can be used in service. So one who serves and uproots his attachment becomes free, announces the fruits of action. Then this is the person he crosses. Okay, I'm going to stop here. Are there any questions? Oh, I can't do that. One second, I have to unmute.
Can you hear me, Maharaj?
One second. Anybody else like to say hello or?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hello, Gail. Thank you.
I just wanted to say that this was really another really nice class. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that from you because you've heard so many classes that I can't just repeat anything. It has to be in context. So that's good. Thank you.
Yeah, this is really nice. And it was also nice to, you know, the questions I had about Sangha from Sunday's class, you answered without my having to ask them today. So that was nice, too. I really like this class a lot. This is really good, too.
Can you repeat what I did repeat?
It's not that you repeated. You elaborated in a way that answered whatever questions I had, you know.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Gajaraj.
You're so consistent. I really appreciate that. You're on all the classes. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're finalizing those dates. Did I write you back on that?
I didn't get your email again.
I thought I sent that to you to confirm it. Okay, I'll send it again. Because I did decide. Okay, I'll let you know.
Okay.
Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Thank you all. Hare Krishna. Thank you.